Welcome to Adelaide Plains Chapter and Verse monthly podcast for all aspiring wordsmiths and versifiers.
Okay, so today we've got some of our group members from Adelaide Plains Poets. We have me, Carolyn Corden, the president of the group. We have Alex, who's the treasurer of the group. We've got Jeanette, who's the secretary of the group. And we've got Marie, who is a much treasured member of the group. A new member, newish member, and she's getting very much involved by being here with us today. I'm very glad about that. So,
what's that first on our agenda?
We've got poet / writer discussion.
So this week, we're going to just talk about something we've read.
The book that I most recently finished reading, I started ages ago, I finished reading it now, is a book by a writer we all know called, what's her name again? It's confusing because I know her as Jeanette Menhennett, but in the book she's somebody else entirely. What's the book?
Jaya,
because why not? I'd rather everybody knew who I was, but we're all different. You and I are both very different people. I'm a little bit of a out there more than you. You're more a quiet achiever. I'm enjoying the book very much. It's a very honest look at the lives of two young women.
The title being London Calling.
London Calling. Two young women gone to London and then getting work there, not place doing work that I would do because I've never done anything like that. But certainly the writer of this book knows that world because she's lived it and done that job. And having read the book, I was certainly not ever want to take on that role because I don't want to do that. Yuck. No.
Some of the jobs weren't too pleasant that we did.
No, and the awful things are,
and
not getting paid properly, and it's just so wrong. And I don't know, is there a union you could go to?
No. That's why they get away with it. There's no effective union.
And unfortunately, we see that happening in Australia at the moment.
Yes.
And that really, really irritates me because people don't join their union, but they complain and then they don't know where to go. Well, hey, go to your union. Right, the book and the ending, floored me slightly. I'm not going to mention what that's all about, but I think, you're a tough writer, you are.
Okay. I wasn't intending it to end that way, but it's the right thing. And it had to end that way. And I didn't really want to end like that either. But it was just the story gets its own momentum, and you can see where the characters are heading. So I don't want you to go there, but I can't stop you because that's the logic of those characters. Mm. Yeah. I had to write a sequel. I have written a sequel.
You have?
Yes.
Oh, I'll have to read that, don't I?
Yes, I'm good. I might publish that next year.
I think that would be a good idea to save Carolyn's anguish.
Yes, I had to do it to save my own anguish.
Yes, and can we talk about the book that you and I are going to do next year, think we're doing next year or not?
Yes.
Okay, that'll be a happy book, that one.
Yes, that will be a happy book.
I've written three books about what I call the Bust of the Dog series, and that's about this dog that lives in my brain, my head. It doesn't really, I'm not... My mental capacity is fine. And I don't think there are real life dogs in my head. So Bus of the Dog is going to get together somehow with a cat called
McTavish
the cat.
A ginger tabby, female, with a lot of attitude.
And if you're anywhere near Bus of the Dog, you're going to have a lot of attitude because Bus of the Dog doesn't really like cats at all.
Oh, McTavish doesn't really like dogs.
There you go. They're
going to
have so much fun.
Neutral.
So much fun. That's next year. That's going to be cool times. Jeanette's going to do McTavish. I'll do Buster. And who wants to go next?
And Marilyn is here now. She's just joined us.
Hello, everyone. We're talking about what we've been reading.
Yes.
I've been reading the most delightful little book by Kerry O'Regan.
She turns up late and she just goes, yeah, I'll go next.
That's fine.
That's fine.
And there's no awkward silence.
No, go for it. Thank you, Marilyn.
Kerry O'Regan was brought up the youngest, I think, of nine children in an Irish Catholic family living in Queensland. Mm-hmm. She's now living in Adelaide. She's become a Quaker. In her
as you do.
I don't know how that happened, what the transition was, but
after that she's probably looking for a quiet life.
She decided when she retired that in spite of never ever having been a sporty, active type of person, that she would walk the Camino Trail, which was walking along from one end of top of Spain to the other end.
Oh, that's a big trip. That's a very, yes.
Yeah, and it's...
Lots of people do that with...
It was originally a pilgrimage. A lot of people do it for other reasons than a pilgrimage, but she just thought that she would do that. She doesn't really explain where the thought came from, but that's what she wanted to do. So she went into training. She used to drive her car somewhere, walk 2 hours in one direction, then turn around and walk back to her car. So she got used to walking for 4 hours at a time. And her mission was to just do that, walk 20 kilometres every day and get across the pilgrimage. Mm. And she writes about it. The title of her book is one of the longest I've ever seen. It's called The Things My Best Friends Told Me for the Camino and for Life. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. Is it Camino?
I don't
know. Sounds sort of Spanish, doesn't it?
Yes, that's pretty right.
Yeah. So she found herself a stick to take with her to walk with, and her friends wrote messages on the stick. And the story is mostly paragraphs about what her friends wrote. Like somebody wrote Travel in Peace. So she's written five or so paragraphs, some longer than the other, but they're all to do with peace. Courage Pilgrim, somebody wrote on her stick. And she wrote, there were days when I questioned the whole thing. What was I doing here? My sister Pat had rung before I left Australia asking why I was going. I didn't really know. and so it goes on. So it's very personal, very easy to read. And because it's just in little paragraphs at a time, it's easy to read. It's not like today we set out from and the weather was, you know, it's not chronological at all. Just whenever these incidents happen, they might have happened at the beginning of the journey or the end of the journey, they just go in where they fit with the little message that her friends wrote on the stick. I found it a very, very good read.
Who's it published by?
I believe it is published by Gin and Derra.
Of course, it's all the published.
It is, Gin and Derra Press. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I recommend it.
Thank you. Alex Wise will go next. It's sort of the way
Certainly.
We're going.
Certainly. My recent readings have been, whilst I've been waiting for Sophie in my car as far as...
That's when I do most of my reading.
And it was a gift as far as the birthday celebrations for the Gawler Library, and it's Fiona McIntosh's Fields of Gold, of which it's only in the first 10 or so pages, of which she's gone back into city-based England and basically looking at a debt collector of sorts and a child's reaction to this sort of behaviour as far as trying to ply money out of people who can't really afford to give it to him. But it's certainly something a little bit different, and whilst it may be termed as chick lit as far as Fiona McIntosh goes, it's certainly an interesting read and a little bit
different. And for somebody in your business... Yes. Your work is quite appropriate.
Yes.
Not having had to do so many school pickups of late, I haven't got to do much reading. I almost got my car book finished while I was on holidays, but what I have been mostly reading is through old bunyips, and so I've actually letters to the editor from the 1870s, and it's very interesting because some of these letters could go into the, apart from, you know, the archaic, slightly mannered wording, you could find in the bunyip today, and this one I loved, Sport versus Humanity, because it's about the evils of hunting.
Hunting?
There's other ones about killing native birds, objecting to killing native birds, so I found some letters that wouldn't be misplaced printed today. Yes, I particularly enjoy the one about the evils of hunting, which I actually can't read because it's not transcribed properly. And it's interesting reading these old letters because they give a lot of insight and it's just the thinking of the time.
Yeah.
From people that are overlooked by history because these are written by average people, not the important people.
Mm. Yeah.
Which kind of leads to the next subject, the Panjandrums. But we'll let Marie talk first and then we'll talk about their word or not.
Right. I've read part of this book, Don't Panic, Panic. And it's really about don't panic. Full stop. This guy's a scientist, Australian scientist. I'll just read a little bit from the introduction He says, I've been moved to write this book by what I perceive to be a social need and in defence of good science, which I love. I want to cast light on the factors outside science which enter the debates and cloud our judgment. He encourages people to realise that there are two sides, sometimes more, to most issues. And he states, people are not only cautious about, but are now terrified of, sex, butter, sugar, tea, coffee, meat, eggs, smoking, alcohol, insect sprays, stress, radiation, sunlight, nuclear power, fossil fuels, mercury in fish and white paper. He goes on to say there are some risks in some situations, especially when things are in excess, but fearing that what he calls the essence of these things is going overboard. And he goes on to say he doesn't have the right answers to debates on environmental and health topics. And he adds that there probably aren't any right answers. And he says that science can't answer all the problems of modern times, and that science can be misused in the interests of special groups.
Like Monsanto
are doing. And he provides examples and encourages what he calls reasonable scepticism. The topics that he covers in some detail include changes in the global climate, natural environmental issues, pollution, smoking, general health, cancer, diet, cholesterol, exercise. So what I've read is very interesting, and I think it's kind of reassuring that you don't panic about everything that you read.
Yes.
All things moderation.
Mm-hmm.
Very good, thank you. Now, next we have a writer's tip. And I forgot what that is. The writer's tip is seek feedback. Get feedback for your writing. Don't hide it in a cupboard or a drawer, because you won't know if it's any good unless you had somebody read it and say, this is wonderful, best you've ever written, or yeah, not bad, or what about if you did, blah, blah, blah. And you're allowed to say, no, actually, it's my book. But that feedback is your reader is telling you.
You changed the name of a character three times in the run.
I had to change my bad guy's name because a friend who's deceased husband.
I changed the name because I had used a name that Mum had used. And I thought, oh yeah, old Barry, she used to talk about old Barry. And then I was, oh, actually, Justin's father's name's Barry. I've never actually drawn that connection to years. I thought, I'd better change it, because in that, it never occurred to me to connect the two. So I changed it, and obviously when I did, so I missed some of the So Angus went through and said, hang on, he was called Harry, and then he's Barry. What's going on?
I had Shackley become Shankly, and Horsey Smythe was Horsley Smythe, and I spelt them different ways.
It's easy to do.
Yeah.
French writer Flaubert in Madame Bovary. At one stage she's got brown eyes, another time blue eyes, and I think another time hazel eyes. So.
Wow, who edited that?
They didn't worry about editing back then.
Oh, I see.
So the word of the day, Jeanette, you can pronounce that.
Panjandrum. Which I actually first heard misused, I think, in BBC adaptation of Little Dorrit, where I think he's referring to goods, and I think Andrew Davies didn't know what the word meant.
Interesting. It sounds like it's probably got Indian... No.
Okay, it means a person who has or claims to have a great deal of authority or influence. And it originated in 18th century nonsense verse penned by actor, dramatist and theatre director Samuel Foote. The line was, and there were present the Piccaninnies and the Jobberlilies and the Gary Lulies and the great Panjandrum himself. The verse was popularised in the 19th century by illustrator Randolph Keldicott when it was published, a book of verse was published in 1885. In World War II, the British Army named an experimental rocket-propelled weapon the Panjandrum, and that particular weapon featured in an episode of Dad's Army, which is appropriate, as Captain Manning used the very definition of a great Panjandrum.
So that gives you an idea of, the sweetness of it all.
Yes.
And now we're going to, some of us, you all of us, I'm not sure, are going to read some of our own work. I'm not going to, because I haven't brought anything.
I have a senru in relation to the situations of Las Vegas. A senru is basically looking at a, like a haiku, but dependent on people or places rather than looking at changing of seasons as haiku usually does. And it's like this. Ack-ack of bullets, Las Vegas imagery, too much to stomach.
Yes, sad times.
But after that, I might find something a bit more humorous to read.
It was only a matter of days after the Milliken versus Barrett case that James was back in court. This time, however, James was not directly involved, though the case was surely at his insistence. The plaintiff is the 13-year-old John Hamilton. Standing up in dock and giving evidence must have been rather painful for a teenager, and he might well have regretted his father's insistence that he go to court. As well as giving some valuable insights into the family history, this case is even more revealing as to life in Smithfield at the time. What was so important at the time that it was worth putting a 13-year-old through the ordeal of giving evidence before a room full of dour men, of panjandrums, in fact, reputation? This was the second case fought over reputation. James had been a defendant the previous time in a case against Beaumont over a bit of name-calling. This kind of court case was clearly not uncommon at the time. Mrs. Katz, wife of the defendant, was postmistress at Smithfield. She then told him she would pull his ears if he did not go, and he did so. And that's what the court case is about.
Oh, really?
Yes. So they took it off. And they won the case. And she had to pay accounting damages.
I can read a little bit of the cup of tea thing. Cup of tea time is a time to get together, and I have a fond memory of my mother and my brother and sister and myself joining my father and Uncle Bert mid-morning and mid-afternoon for a cup of tea made with condensed milk. I should explain, Dad and his brother Bert worked together making horseradish. Condensed milk is a core component of the finished product, and rather than having to go to the house for milk and sugar for that matter, condensed milk from a huge heavy container was used. So they would dip their little teaspoons right into these very big containers holding litres, gallons, I don't know how much, they were really heavy actually to lift. Get a little teaspoon out into the cup and add the tea.
That sounds too sweet to me.
Oh, they had biscuits with it as well, and sometimes the biscuits fell into the cup of tea. So because they used they were biscuit dippers. I never was. But they were. I didn't take that part on. But that's a memory I have. Condensed milk tea. I don't think that many people have condensed milk tea. I thought it was
condensed milk sitting in the fridge right now because I bought a tube for Justin for coffee on the road trip over and back.
Oh, okay.
And last night Patrick and I were attacking the teaspoon. I still like condensed milk.
Well, us kids would have loved to have had a teaspoon of condensed milk. We were never allowed to have one.
I've read this before at a meeting. It's called The Date. We sat together eating our school lunches. My Vegemite on white bread sandwich and reduced for quick sale donut contrasted with his paleo diet collection of goodies, complete with reusable cloth bag. My naive teenage heart beat quickly. It was the second day that week the guy of my dreams had sat next to me at lunchtime. He turned to me and said, a little hesitantly, "Would you like a date?"
Ooh.
There is limited air on cloud nine. I gasped, "Yes, please." He handed me a plump medjool date from his lunch bag, and my heart crashed to the ground.
Not that kind of date.
No.
And did you actually like date?
Oh, this is made up.
You sucked in. You got me in.
That's good writing.
Yes.
I like dates.
I don't think I would have ever eaten one on its own.
Oh, yes.
Yes? Eat them in a cake.
I think that's it.
We've got the next thing on the list is the listener's challenge. I think Jeanette knows all about what the listener's challenge is. I hope she does, because I don't.
For this month, then, we'll have a change, and it can be something using the word panjandrum, but it has to be Gawler related. has to be a Gawler panjandrum. And I think Gawler's history's had plenty of panjandrums in it, so I just walked past the statue of John Martin, and he was a bit of a panjandrum, so yes, to Gawler CBA.
GawlerCBA@gmail.com.
Yeah, and just put writer's group prompt.
That's excellent. And we'll read it. Wonderful. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.